Well, I found a little treasure in the scriptures this week that impressed me very greatly, and I hadn't really seen that before. So I feel like it would be good to share it this morning. I'm going to write it on the board. You ever read about Rehoboam? He was King Solomon's son. And what I've written up here is his Rehoboam's missed opportunity. So I'd like for you to read with me about it in 1 Kings. To give a background, Rehoboam's father, Solomon, had been visited twice by the Lord. The first time the Lord visited him as a young king and said, "Ask what I will give you." And Solomon asked for wisdom. He didn't ask for riches or conquest over his enemies or a long life, but he asked for wisdom. And God gave him the gift of wisdom. He was considered the wisest man in the world, and kings and people all over the world came to him for advice, and he advised them. And he also wrote the book of Proverbs and the book of Ecclesiastes that we have in our Bible. And in those things, in those Proverbs, there are great rules for life, which even Jesus took those same principles and taught them in his teachings. The second time that God came to Solomon, he said, "Solomon, if you will stay faithful to me, I will bless you." This time it was a warning. He warned him and said, "Don't go away from me, because I will take the kingdom from your family line and it will be given to others." But after that blessing and then after that warning, it tells us in chapter 11 that he loved. And not only did he love all kinds of women from all over the world, but he clave to them in love, or he determined to keep them in his life at all costs. And it was a great cost, because the women in his life, in verse 9, his heart was turned away from the Lord, and he worshipped other gods because of the women in his life. And it said the Lord was angry with Solomon because his heart was turned from the Lord God of Israel, which had appeared unto him twice and had commanded him concerning this thing, that he should not go after other gods. But he kept not that which the Lord commanded. In all of what God did with Solomon, we see God's great love and mercy, even though he had to judge Solomon. And he was severe with him. Yet in everything that he did, there was always room. There was always mercy. He always buffered his judgments when he was dealing with Solomon. And the reason why he did that was because Solomon's father, David, had such a heart after God that it softened God's dealings with David's whole family all the way down through. And he always gave them a place in the kingdom of Israel because of David's heart after him. Those things are great things that we can look at and contemplate and absorb into our lives and learn from them. Very great lessons for us. So that's the background. He told Solomon that he would take the kingdom away from him, but he would leave him one tribe. He would leave his sons one tribe, and that's exactly what happened. The other tribes of Israel, of course, the tribe of Levi was the tribe of priests. So in others, there were ten other tribes that were joined to a man named Jeroboam, who rose up in opposition to Solomon's son. They went with him, but Solomon's son Rehoboam had the tribe of Judah, which was a very large, when you look on the map, you can see Judah is a great big large area, and that's where the city of Jerusalem was, and he left that with Solomon's posterity. Well, when Jeroboam came to rule, he was given a request from the people of Israel, these 10 tribes. They all came to him and they said, "Are you going to tax us and rule us in a heavier way than your father Solomon, or are you going to let up on us?" And he said, "You give me 3 days to think about it, and then you get back with me." And during those 3 days, Rehoboam consulted with the old men that had been in his father's kingdom and said, "What do you think I should do?" After he listened to their advice, then he consulted with the young men that were around him that grew up with him in this prosperous kingdom of his father's. They were young. They gave him far different advice. So let's see what happens. What does Rehoboam do? In verse 6 of 1 Kings 12, King Rehoboam consulted with the old men that stood before Solomon, his father, while he yet lived, and said, How do you advise that I may answer this people?" Now there's something to be said for this mourning for the old paths. I think it was the Lord speaking through Jeremiah to the children of Israel. He said, "Stand you in the ways," or at the crossroad, "and see, and ask for the old paths. Where is the good way that we might go?" And he said, "If you'll do that, if you'll ask for the old paths, you'll find rest to your souls." And that's been a conflict, it seems like, down through the ages, is do I take the path of wisdom that is the old path, or do I go with the new thinking? And you have that in down through the years. Rehoboam asked the old men, "How do you advise that I may answer this people?" Verse 7, "They spake unto him, saying, 'If thou wilt be a servant unto this people this day, and will serve them, and answer them, and speak good words to them, then they will be thy servants forever.'" Well, it says he forsook the counsel of the old men, which they had given him, and consulted with the young men that were grown up with him, and which stood before him. And he said unto them, "What counsel do you give me that we may answer this people who have spoken to me, saying, 'Make the yoke which thy father did put upon us lighter'?" And the young men that were grown up with him spake unto him, saying, "Thus shalt thou speak unto this people that spake unto thee, saying, 'Thy father made our yoke heavy, but make thou it lighter unto us.' Thus shalt thou say unto them, 'My little finger shall be thicker than my father's loins. And now, whereas my father did lay you with a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father hath chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions.'" That's what he answered those people that said, "Are you going to tax us just as heavy? Are you going to force us into labor just as hard? Is there going to be as much oppression?" See, Solomon, as he grew older, he had turned away from his wisdom, his own wisdom, and had been, looks like to me, that he had been doing this as a king, being oppressive to his own people. When a king is oppressive to his own people, what's going to happen eventually? They're going to rebel. Yes, that just naturally happens. So here was an opportunity. The people had entreated Rehoboam and said, how are you going to rule?" And the old men that he consulted gave him 3 rules for ruling. And as I read this verse, it was enlightened to me. And there, I've read commentators on it, and a lot of them have negative things to say about it. But I'll just share with you what came to me, because I recognize that in all of our lives, we're rulers over something. Speaking personally, in my life as a mother has to guide the house. A mother's job is to have she has a little kingdom, a little realm of authority in her home. How do we rule in our homes? Then it's in God's order that he placed the man to be the head even over that, to rule his household. So that's very relevant to us today. In our little congregation, we have heads of household, future heads of household. How is it that we can gain the hearts of those that we rule? And then you think about the country that we live in. We have ruling authorities that are in these places. If they could know God's secret, the things that God would say to them, I think that this verse this morning has some great import to us, and just want to look at these things for just a little bit. How do you advise that I answer these people? And they said, if you will be a servant unto this people. Now that is, that's a little bit different than the way people would think that I must rule. Me, be a servant, I'm the dad here. Me, be a servant, I'm this child's mother. I'm not its servant. And I understand that there are ranges to this. It says servant. It doesn't say slave. Be these people's slave. They're going to tell you what to do, and you do everything that they do. Remember, this was a kingdom. It was a constitutional kingdom. It wasn't a democracy. In this kingdom, it was dependent on the king being a good king. And if the king was a good king, everything went well. Everyone prospered. And really, that's how God has set up a household. He's given the household a king, if you will. The father in the household. The household isn't a democracy. There aren't equal voices. There's equal worth. You might say no one is below another. The father is not the ruler because he's the biggest. He's the ruler because God put him there. And these are the rules that should govern his life. The mother's not the ruler over the little ones because she's the biggest or because she's the best or whatever. She's the ruler over her little ones because God put her there. He put her there to keep the house and to guide the house. And there's a lot in that. There's a lot of wisdom that has to be used there to make everything go right. And as we're in this world and we're in these positions, wouldn't it do as well to find out, Lord, how is your way for doing this? Because I want to do it right. In the New Testament, Paul, in instructing people who were being led and who desired places of leadership in the New Testament church, you know what the requirement was for these men? They had to rule their own houses well. He said to one, in the case of a bishop, he said, if a man doesn't know how to rule his own house, how can he have a place of leadership in the church? So these things are important to know, how do I rule? And this is the first one. He said, if you're going to rule, you need to be a servant to the people, a servant king. Now, Paul, he qualified it in some of the things that he said. Look at this one in Galatians chapter 5, verse 13. Now, he wasn't advocating that we all are slaves to one another. He didn't advocate that you rule me and that you have me on a leash or you have a whip over me. He didn't advocate that. But listen to what he said here in verse 13 of Galatians 5. For brethren, you've been called unto liberty. Only use not liberty for an occasion to the flesh. You see the balance here? You're a free person. You're not in bondage to anybody. You're not in bondage to the law. The law of God's not meant to be a bondage to you. Truly, the law of God is to set you free. You're not in bondage. You're free. You're called to freedom. But then he put a limitation on freedom that keeps it freedom. Because if this limitation's not put on there, then their bondage comes up in a person's relationships. He said, don't use your liberty and your freedom as an occasion to your flesh. Don't be self-serving, because what happens when a person is self-serving? They put down others. They stomp on others. They disregard others. They ignore others. So in that, here comes oppression again. So he said, you're called to liberty, but you're not called to stomp on others. So don't use your liberty as an occasion to your flesh. But what does he say? By love, serve one another. And then Paul, he tells how that he did that in 1 Corinthians chapter 9. He says this in verse 19. For though I be free from all men, yet have I made myself servant unto all, that I may gain the more. This is truly the golden law, I would say, of being a ruler, is to be a servant ruler, to serve willingly, to give of yourself to serve. When the people of this nation, if they would discern in the heart of the elected official, whomever he or she may be, if they detect in that person a self-serving, what is the general feeling of the people? It's disdain, isn't it? You disdain a person that you realize, oh, he's in the office for his own gain. But if you detect that the ruler that you've elected or that's in there, the police chief, the sheriff, the judge, the mayor, the governor, the representatives and the senators who make the laws, and then the president, all of these people that are in leadership, if we as a people detect that person is true statesman, he has this country's and this state and this city's, all of the needs and the people of the city in his heart. He serves us. He gives himself his time, his money, his efforts, his energy, his mental abilities. He cultivates everything that he does to help us. When we realize that about our rulers, what is our response? When you know that someone's doing it to truly serve your needs, you respect that, don't you? You have a great respect for a person who does that. And what is then, what do you want to do? You want to get in there and make it work. You want to help. You want to serve too. You want to honor that person. You want to, if they've given a command and you know it's totally for your welfare, you want to do it. This is what the old men told Rehoboam. Rehoboam, if you want the hearts of your people, and truly, to be a good king, you don't want to do it with an iron fist. You know what? I think it was Peter. Peter told the saints in the New Testament. How was it here? He was talking to the elders, the ones who were pastors and leaders in the New Testament church. 1 Peter 5. He said, the elders which are among you I exhort, and I'm also an elder, he says, and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, and also a partaker of the glory that shall be revealed. And this is what he tells the elders, feed the flock of God which is among you. In that feeding, there's a service there to the people. You feed them. And this is spiritually. Now, a governmental ruler would be interested in making sure his people don't starve. Who was it talking to me just the other day and telling me, I think it was Darren, telling me how this ruler came into place in one of the European or Asian countries. And the food. Oh, it was the Irish famine. Took the food from the people and sent it somewhere else, and those people starved by the thousands. Starved, and I know this has happened in other countries. It happened under communism many times in the communist countries. The rulers would take the people's very food from them. In the Old Testament, God chastised the priests and those people who should guide the people spiritually. He said, "You have been like cows. You've been like cows that push the diseased and weak ones out of the way and out of the watering hole, and fed yourselves and watered yourselves, and would not allow those who really needed it to have it." God has always, always judged that type of behavior. Here he said, "You feed the flock of God which is among you, taking the oversight thereof, not by constraint, but willingly. You be a ruler willingly, not because you're forced to do this. Not because, oh, I don't want to." And what this means with the oversight means, in Hebrews, it tells about it. Someone who watches for your soul, who gives an account to God on how he treats you. That's what a ruler is. Someone who is actually ruled by God. A father, a governmental leader, a pastor or a spiritual leader. They're under God's kingship. They answer to God for how they deal with the souls that look to them for leadership. Did you know that? Did you know that a minister who gets up is accountable to God for how he or she instructs you? That if God says for him to say something to you and he doesn't do it and he withholds it, he's accountable to God for that? It's a very serious thing to be in a place of leadership, in a place of feeding the souls of men and taking the accountability for their souls. Peter, or in the book of Hebrews, he said, they watch for your souls as they who must give an account. And he said, follow that advice and that counsel that they give you, that they may give an account of you with joy and not with grief. So there's quite a bit about this in the scriptures. When Jesus was talking to his disciples, they had a little thing going about who should be the greatest. Remember that? They were always in a squabble about that. And Jesus sometimes would hear them, and sometimes he just discerned that here they are squabbling again about who is going to be in leadership positions after I go back to heaven. And so he talked to them about it. He said, now, you observe that the Gentile kings, whoever is the greatest, whoever has got the most clout, whoever can run over everybody, whoever rises to the top by putting others down. You notice that those type of people are in government here in the Gentile nations. But he said, it shall not be so among you. He was talking to his church, the men that would be pastors and leaders in his church. He said, you don't act that way. Oh, I wish that pastors and leaders of churches today would still follow what Jesus said. But you know, there is out there, there's a hierarchy. There's preachers who cut down other preachers and rise to the top by pressing down other people, and they lord it over their congregations. I've heard of people who professed holiness in their lives, that they were the church, and those people, they called the shots. Everybody had to answer to them. If you wanted to marry somebody, you had to ask that preacher. If you wanted to move somewhere, you had to ask the preacher. If you wanted to go out and pass out tracts, you had to make it okay with your preacher. That's not, God didn't establish that. That's a self-serving person. He said, it shall not be so among you. He said, you take the leadership thereof, not by constraint, but willingly. And then he went on and he said, not for filthy lucre. Don't do it because you're getting paid for it. Jesus said the hireling, the person who keeps over the sheep for pay, He'll run when the wolf comes. He doesn't love the sheep. Jesus said he was a good shepherd because he laid down his life so the sheep would be safe. Jesus is the ultimate example of this that I'm speaking to you about. Jesus said in, let me finish this. Don't do it for filthy lucre, but do it of a ready mind. Just willing, humble. I'm there when you need me. I don't have to have any pay. I'm here because I have your heart and my heart. Neither as being lords over God's heritage, but being examples to the flock. What I was referring to here was Jesus. 1 John chapter 3. He told us about the good shepherd, that the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. And John here says, verse 16, hereby perceive we the love of God because he laid down his life for us. I was reading yesterday a story that Billy Graham's son, Will, his grandson, Will, shared this story that one of his friends asked him a question. He said, Will, would you lay down your life for me? And the two friends, they thought about it together, and they both said, you know, I think the other friend said, I would be willing to lay down my life for you, but I just don't think I can say that I would give my son's life for you. I just don't think I could do it. And Will thought about it too, and he said, yeah, that's what would be hard. To, in your place, to give my son and have him to die in your place. That's what, and they said to each other, they said, you know, that's really what God did for us. That's the hardest thing it would be to do, and yet God did that for us. When we sing songs, oh, we sang a song a while ago about keep me near thy side, thy bleeding side. You know what that's really talking about. It's not a literal, I thought, you know, if I was a child, this would really hang me up. But when I think about pressing to a side that's bleeding, but that's not, it's a spiritual language. Jesus' bleeding side simply means that he gave his life for us. When we press close to him, we press close to him, realizing and knowing he loved me so much that he died for me. And that's what makes him so dear to me. He has my needs at his heart. He served me to the ultimate. He gave his life for me. And that's really at the heart of a good king, a good ruler. I'd give my life for you. I would lay down and be hurt instead of you. If there's danger coming, I'll shield you and take it. That's what a real ruler, a true ruler would do. A mother for her children, a father for his family. Of course, we expect that of a father or a mother. And we think, well, that's, you know, we just think that's the way it would be. But did you know there are people who don't have the hearts of their family like that? There are people today, sad to say, in this world, who don't love their families in that way. But I would encourage each of us, each of you coming up, consider what these old men told Rehoboam. If you want your family, your children, to love you and serve you, here's how to do that. You be a servant to them, not a slave. Not the little children aren't kings and tyrants in the home. They're under submission and authority because God made it that way. That's where real freedom and happiness comes from. But a mother and a father give their lives. A mother, she gives her time, her strength to feed, to make sure her children are fed and clothed and prepared for life and fed and clothed spiritually. She has their needs right in her heart all the time. You know, there's a lot of self-serving people out there. Their children, they take it or leave it. But As long as my needs are met, then I'm okay. You lose the heart of your children if you like that. But he said also, and I want to go to this one now. He said, if you will serve them and answer them. And it could be saying, answer their need today with some good words. But I'd like to take this just today as it is said. You serve them and you answer them. This word answer, I looked it up and it means to respond. There's a lot in that. As someone who, either a father or a mother or a leader of any kind, a boss in a company, how do we respond to our children or to the ones that we are in leadership of? How do we respond to their needs? How do we respond to their entreaties? I know that in James he said the wisdom that's from above is easy to be entreated. Someone can come to you and say, you know what? Can I talk to you about something that's really bothering me about what you're doing? How do we respond? Are we easy to, do we say, get out of here? Do we ignore? Do we put them off? Do we get defensive? Or do we let people share their hearts with us? Maybe we think we're not doing anything wrong. Maybe we think, I'm not ever wrong. That's how we come across sometimes. I'm always right. You don't question me. But sometimes there are things in our lives that even our children can talk to us and say, you know what? I just don't feel like that you're listening to me. I don't feel like that you're understanding what I'm saying. He said, don't... You answer people, respond to them. And then he said, speak good words to them, and they will be your servants forever. I thought about the example that Jesus set in all of these things. Romans chapter 15, I believe it is. Verse 1, we then that are strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak and not to please ourselves. That verse has challenged me as a parent so many times. How many times we get so aggravated and irritated at the infirmities of our little children. We expect so much. We expect them to be so perfect. And he says here, bear with the infirmities. Sometimes a man isn't able to bear with the infirmities of his wife. Sometimes a ruler isn't able to bear the weaknesses and the failures of those that he's leading. But he said here, we then that are strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak and not to please ourselves. Let every one of us please his neighbor for his good, to edification, to build him up. For even Christ pleased not himself, but as it is written, the reproaches of them that reproached thee fell on me. And he says in verse 5, you be like-minded according to what you see in Jesus Christ. I believe it's Philippians chapter 2. It says something like that too. Verse 3, let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem other better than themselves. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. And it goes on in verse 7, it says, he took upon him the form of a servant and was made in the likeness of men. Well, this is what made Christ the wonderful king that he is, because he became a servant. And he laid down his life for us. And whenever you think about his answer, how does he answer us? How does he respond to us when you call on him? He's right there. His ears are open. He listens to your cry. David said, I love the Lord because he heard my voice and my supplication. There's a little secret in there. How do we respond to the cries, to the heart cries? How are we in tune with the heart cries of our children? When we see something happening, maybe it's a behavior. Just open your heart and your mind and think, what is my child saying when he's doing this? Is he crying? Is he crying for something? Is there a need there that I am not responding to? Lord, help us. There were some things, I know, raising children in our children that I simply was not aware of at the time, and the Lord opened my mind to it and said, this is really what's going on. This is what your child is needing. Jesus, when you think about the last one then, you speak good words to them. Oh, when I thought about that, I thought about the example that's in Christ. Think about the words that he has spoken to us, his disciples. The gracious words, the comforting words, the word that's in season. One scripture says, a word spoken in season, how good it is. How forcible are right words. A word fitly spoken. He gave a word picture there. It's like a basket of silver loaded with beautiful, golden, delicious apples. Something worth painting. Something worth capturing. Something beautiful with the light shining on it and the beautiful colors. He said that's what a word fitly spoken is like. Something that when you say good words to your children, do you know a good word? What is it? There's death and life in the power of the tongue. When a man says good words to his wife on a day-to-day basis, this is the result. She'll serve you forever. It really is. Not just empty words either, but comforting words, reassuring words, affirming words, edifying words, building her up. When a mother says those kind of things to her children, the words that we speak many times make or break our relationships with our children. So, going back to the beginning and the title, what do you think Rehoboam missed when he turned down this counsel? Just think about the years and years, the implications of this decision. He could have had the hearts of his subjects. If he would have been a king who responded to their needs, who served them in a good way, who didn't allow them to rule him, but he discerned their needs and met them. He kept them fed. He kept them secure from their enemies. That's what a king did to serve his people. If he would have done that, I wonder how different things could have been for the children of Israel after that. Probably many years. God, in his mercy, gave him a spot of leadership. I think about somebody. Remember the scripture in Proverbs that describes a broken down vineyard and house because of neglect? And somebody had preached on that one time, and they said this: everyone, even the unworthy person, has been given a field to keep. And that's true. You see parents of all kinds out there. God has entrusted them with children. You see leaders of all kinds out there that have been entrusted with the care of a whole city. Even the unworthy have been given responsibilities. But in that, God has given you a chance. He gave an opportunity to Rehoboam. You can do it this way. You can lead in this way. Or you can lead in this way and you'll have a rebellion. And that's exactly what happened. Rehoboam missed a wonderful opportunity. Sometimes I've looked at parents out there in the stores and I see them yapping and snapping at their children. And I want to go up to them and say, would you like, when your child is 18 or 20, would you like to have a really good relationship with them? I wonder what they would say. This is none of your business. Get out of here. It's probably what they would say. But I would love to just talk with them gently and say, I want to share with you. If you'll not snap at your children like this, if you'll rule them in love, you can have the friendship of adult children, and there is no greater joy than that. I just never knew it could be so good. I just thank the Lord for it. It's a wonderful privilege, and I thank the Lord for it. But what an opportunity he missed. Well, I want to just share that with you this morning. I trust it will put something in your heart that will remain there for a good long while.